Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Help Me Promise podcast. My name is Chris, and tonight, this evening, I am joined by my very best friend in the whole wide world in what is episode 73 of the podcast. Dee, it is once again wonderful to have you here. That was a nice intro. I haven't started recording that.
It was good.
Good.
It was solid.
Okay.
Great intro, Chris.
Good. Okay. Here we go.
Mulligan.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 73 of the podcast. My name is Chris, and tonight I am joined by my very best friend in the whole wide world on what is episode 73, which I've just said, of the podcast. Dee, it's good to have you here.
It's good to be here, Chris.
Thank you. Oh, God, we should have used the first one.
The first one was so good.
So much better.
You won't get to see it, but he did such a good intro the first
time.
Yeah,
around. You'll hear it.
You'll hear it?
Yeah.
We leave it in?
We'll probably leave it in, just because editing is just so, ugh. Thank you for joining us on what is March the 10th.
Mm.
We are kicking the ass out of March already, Dee.
Yeah, it was easy done, Chris.
It is, yeah.
And Chris, you told me last week it comes in like a lamb and out like a lamb.
Mm-hmm.
Have you found that to be the case?
But yes.
Was the snow coming
down? It's now snowing, Dee. Last, what was it? Like February ended.
Lovely.
Warm.
Gorgeous.
And then March just started like shitstorm. Yeah. Absolute shitstorm. Rain, wind, now snow, hail. Some hail in there. Not nice at all.
It's because like it always has to rain on St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah.
That's what has to happen. And that's why March decides just to shit all over.
That's because the snakes took all of the the warm climate.
Uh-huh.
That's why snakes can't live here no more.
Yeah.
Because it always rains in St. Patrick's.
St. Patrick just.
Yep.
And
no more.
He commanded it.
No more. That's the true essence of St. Patrick's Day. And that's what we'll be talking about next week in the podcast. There you go. There's our topic. St. Patrick's Day. Today is March 10th, Dee, which means I obviously have a list for you.
Mm-hmm.
I know Excellent. You love these lists.
I do.
What happened on March 10th, Dee, in 2005?
Oh, okay, I can do this. 2005 was a good year.
Oh, this is good. I didn't hear about this.
Was it, I was going to say, was that the year that tsunami happened out in like...
No, it was 2004.
Well, then I don't know.
I think this is a bigger tragedy, I'm not going to lie.
Whoa.
So 55 Oscars made for the Academy Awards are stolen.
You think that's a bigger tragedy?
Well, it's a tragedy in, like, our world.
Let's just sidestep that comment.
I mean, like, in first world. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, yeah.
Do you
know what I mean? It's like a first world problem. Like, oh someone stole the Oscars. Someone stole the gold Oscars, you know?
This is the type of thing we get up in arms about.
55 of them. You know? Not just one of them.
They did nothing wrong. They were innocent.
They took the 55 fucking Oscars and ran. Yeah, so 55 Oscars just disappeared.
Is there a thing about the Oscars that you can't, if you win an Oscar, you can't sell it? Well, you can sell it, but you have to give like first refusal to the Oscar people and they can buy it off you for like a dollar.
Really?
Yeah, so stop like actors going broke and selling their Oscars for like hundreds of thousands or whatever. Yeah, something like that.
There you go. You learn something new every day.
But
I'm not going to stick to that list because it's about stars who appear in cameo roles in The Great Muppet Caper. I know you just don't want to hear that. So instead, I'm going to talk to you about the enigma of the Great Sphinx at Giza. Do you know anything about the Great Sphinx at Giza?
I know that it is not. It is bigger than a regular Sphinx.
So we're talking Egypt here. We're talking Giza,
yeah,
Egypt,
this is
pyramids.
This is the thing. It's got like the body of a cat and the head of a person. It's got no nose.
Yeah.
In Egypt.
Well, the Sphinx is a mythical beast with the head of a human, the body of a lion, and the wings of a bird.
Basically what I said. Yeah.
Pretty much, yeah, you had that. Carvings of the Sphinx were very common in ancient Egypt. Probably the most famous surviving avenue of Sphinxes can be seen at the entrance of the Temple of Luxor. There you go. The most famous carving of the Sphinx is the Great Sphinx at Giza in Egypt. Apparently carved from an outcrop of rock, even its age is disputed, although most Egyptologists settle on it being between 4,500 and 6,500 years old.
First of all, it's really
I know where you're going with this.
It's really cool that those people are called Egyptologists.
And let's leave that there.
Why isn't it always that simple?
I know.
Like, why, if you're like a doctor of like noses, you're a nosologist.
Exactly.
Why does it have to be penodorphodontologist?
Exactly. Like, podiatry is your feet.
Yeah.
Why not just a footologist?
Footology.
Footology. I know. Perfect.
But anyway,
Were you going to give off to me about 4,500? No. Oh, I thought that's where you were going with that.
Oh no, why do you know?
I think you pulled me on that before in the podcast.
4,500.
Like I was going to say 4,500 and 6,500. Are you that type of person that would
not
give
really? Off? I don't mind 4,500.
That's fine. Let's sidestep that.
If you did 4,500,
oh,
I would have been mad.
What about 45k? Actually, that's that way too long. Okay, let's sidestep. Some New Age believers claim that the Sphinx is in fact hollow and contains some of the most important secrets of the universe.
Of course.
Why not?
And it was only built 4,000 years ago
exactly.
by the aliens.
Here, well, the Sphinx is missing its nose. Many people, including this guy who wrote the book.
Philip Ardell.
Yes. Have claimed that it was blown off by Napoleon's army. It has been pointed out, however, that there were sketches made in 1737 showing the Sphinx without its nose. Mm-hmm. And Napoleon wasn't born until 1769. I think it's just, was it not just like erosion?
I heard it was destroyed by...
Erosion.
I heard it was destroyed by like either Muslims or Christians who came into Egypt.
Oh, during the during the Great Crusade?
No.
No?
Just another time. And they were like, oh.
Just another time.
false god. And they broke its nose because apparently you don't have a nose, you're not a god.
Really?
No.
Oh.
But I'm spitballing.
Do you know the Great... It's not called the Great Crusade. What's it called? Like the Crusades?
Oh, yeah.
Is the biggest human tragedy of life
yeah,
in probably. The world ever or of all time?
Kingdom of Heaven.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's yeah. the Crusade.
Oh, so it is, yeah. They also talk about it during the Da Vinci Code as well. That's where I know it from.
There was like four or five Crusades.
Yeah.
Basically, all of them were like coming from like England and like Europe and going, let's go fuck that place up.
Yeah. What do you think of the possibility of shit being inside the Sphinx?
I mean, I like the idea of it.
I love it.
But like the cynic in me is just like, it's probably not empty.
There's some weird stuff inside the pyramids, you know?
This is it though. That happened, like, basically all the pyramids have been, like, looted, like, hundreds of years ago. People just go in and just rob everything.
Did they?
Yeah, that's why you never find shit.
I like to think that the pyramids are booby-trapped.
I think they are booby-trapped, aren't they?
And that, probably. And there are, like, passages and shit that will lead you to, like, treasured rooms and stuff like that.
I think in the Great Pyramid, at Giza, it's like... There's all these like passages and you go up them, but as soon as you go up them, like shit falls behind you and
no
it
closes. Way.
And it was only meant to be used like when you're leaving it or whatever. But if you go the wrong way down it, you die. You never make it out.
I will believe that. I'll believe that.
You heard it here first.
I love Egypt stuff.
You should become an Egyptologist.
Don't know if I could deal with the heat.
You'd be a remote.
Yeah, I could work from home.
Yeah, work from home.
That'd be great. That's a good topic for podcast about Egypt.
Egypt.
The shit that lies in Egypt, yeah.
Who built them pyramids?
That's what I want to talk about. Who built the pyramids? Let's
lead on. Ladlo construction.
Let's lead on from that a little bit. Because, well, actually, how do we normally do this? News?
Yeah.
We always.
We have a basic structure here, I'm sure regular listeners are accustomed to. How do you been? Blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. News.
Oh,
other stuff.
I'm going to say, I listened to a podcast during the weekday. It was like a fitness podcast. It was one that popped up on Spotify as being like one of like the top podcasts or whatever of the week or however their algorithm works. I don't know how they pop up. So I was like, oh, this should be good. My God, it was one of the worst things I ever listened to in terms of audio quality. One guy sounded like he had a mic and he was Skyping another guy who was sitting in a hollow room with no mic that wasn't properly plugged in. That's what it sounded like. Oh my God, it was so bad.
I don't like that.
And I just thought, we're so much better than those guys. But, you know.
In my humble opinion, we're far better than
I listened guys. Like 5 minutes, and even though the topic was interesting, it was about like, were they talking about like fat or something in diet? I don't know. Whether it was neat, I don't know.
Talking about how much fat is inside the Great Sphinx.
Probably. Egypt. It was fascinating, but I was just like, I can't listen to poor audio. So we strive to bring you great audio every week.
You're welcome.
If not, oh. While we're touching on this, the video was late this week, but the audio was right on cue.
Yeah. So you know
that's because he does the audio and I do the video.
If you want to get there first, you got to go audio.
Oh yeah, that's another thing. That's what we're doing now.
Yeah.
So the audio of the podcast will be up every Monday, bang on noon. I'm assuming.
And the sun is highest in the sky. You look on Spotify.
Oh
right.
Oh,
right?
Can we get that? Can we get that? Write that down. When the sun is highest in the sky. There you'll find us on Spotify. Good night, everybody.
That's going to close off.
Oh, yeah, that's brilliant. Oh, my God, that's excellent. And then you'll find the video version a day later on YouTube.
It's hard to make that one rhyme.
I'll work it up for next week. I'll work it up for next week, dude. But yeah, you won't get the video to a day late. We're not putting them both up together because you got to pick one of those.
You got to make a choice.
I'm fed up of you guys just deciding you want one or the other and then the other one's suffering. So pick one.
It's because we want the video to be...
The video is just like an ad. Yeah, the video. Yeah, exactly. The video is just like an add-on, you know.
You're lucky you're getting anything.
Plus, you normally get like the little like trailer that we put up. Did you see the little like the wee what do you call it? No. I put one up.
I didn't see it. Instagram?
I want to yeah. And Facebook. I want to tag you in it. I would not be taggy. So I didn't. And that's that. Okay, so we'll move on to the news this week, D. and I'm just back with stupid news. Because I don't
like to hear though. I want to hear some stupid news.
Okay, what about this then? Space is fake. The new conspiracy coming to life. Did you hear about this?
Christopher, I've been reading about this for years.
Okay,
I've
well,
been telling you for years.
I've only seen this week.
Is this flat earther?
I don't think so. No. No.
Okay.
I don't think so. So precisely 50 years ago, Apollo 9 took three astronauts into low Earth orbit, where two of them opened a hatch into the void to perform a spacewalk, a crucial step to the moon landings. This week, a new chapter in American space program came to triumphant close when Elon Musk's SpaceX Dragon capsule splashed down in the Atlantic Ocean, having successfully docked with the ISS. And not because of the decades-old conspiracy theory that the moon landings were hoaxed by NASA, but because of the emerging belief that the entire edifice... Ooh, what a word.
Edifice?
...of space is fake. It is inevitably a predominantly online movement. There, amid a handful of trolls, countless tweets, videos, blogs pumped out by passionate planners... are winning huge audiences by lending credence to the idea that the entire architecture of our solar system that we know is a fraud. They and fellow believers rally under the hashtag banner Space is Fake. One video shared on YouTube explaining the Space is Fake conspiracy has racked 1.6 million views. Meant to many, it is the logical extension of a firmly held belief that the Earth is flat, that we don't live in a planet but a vast plane. Indeed, later this year, Globe Lie Convention is due to take place over a series of weekends across Europe. With attendees paying between we don't need to know that.
Spacesisfake.co.uk. This is brilliant. This is great. This is the natural evolution of flat Earth, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah. By contrast, the reality behind Space is Fake is still being thrashed out by its adherents. One camp believes that space is merely an artificial light show projected above our flat, endless plane of land and sea. So it's a light show. Another views Earth as disc-shaped, enclosed at the edges by an Antarctic ice wall with a dome-like firmament setting on top. Yeah.
Did I tell you I watched that Flat Earth documentary on Netflix?
No.
All of this stuff's in there.
Really?
Yeah, it's actually a really good watch. I recommend it.
Wow. What they all agree on though is that the standard geometry, geophysics, and even gravity on Earth, as we're all told, is a lie. We all know space is fake, and NASA lies. A user called Awaken Flat Earth this week tweeted to Elon Musk and William Shatner, who played Star Trek's Captain Kirk, "Who are we kidding?" I just don't get this. I don't get where did this like this only this only kicked off in recent enough years though as well. Didn't
the whole
it?
Flat Earth thing.
Yeah,
started with that. Yeah.
So
it's interesting. I recommend everyone to watch that documentary. It's actually a really good watch.
But
it's not
why?
Just like shitting all over them, but it doesn't give them like much credit either. It's just kind of an interesting thing to like understand why these people think the things they do, because they're not idiots. Like a lot of them are like not a lot of them, but some of them are like engineers who are like really interested in trying to prove that the Earth is flat and prove that there's this dome thing that overcovers us all, and then that's it. But like, you know.
But where did it start? Like, why do they want?
I don't know.
Was it just one guy that was just like, "Oh, I know it's flat."
Well, there used to be a flat Earth community, like mm-hmm. back in like the 30s, I think it was, and they were just like, "No, it's flat." I don't know. Actually, this would be interesting to investigate sometime for a podcast.
Flat Earth.
We get a flat earther on an interview. And discuss, you know, what you think versus what we think.
Yeah.
But spacesisfake.com, Chris.
Is that a real thing?
Yeah. No, I just made that up.
It probably is a real thing.
Probably is, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
It's a bit mad, like, I would be so bummed out if space was fake. I think space is awesome.
Well,
I think space is so
what cool. Do they believe, though? That these people just go to a Hollywood studio and film shit?
They think NASA, like, does this to try and keep people in the idea that the Earth is round. Wow. And that, all this.
Okay. Well, that's stupid.
There's a conspiracy, Chris.
Some other stupid news. Did you hear about PewDiePie fans vandalizing a war memorial in New York?
Oh, God.
Did you hear about this? No.
No. No.
The world's most popular YouTube channel has once again attracted controversy after fans of PewDiePie defaced a World War II memorial in New York. The Brooklyn War Memorial in Cadman Plaza Park was tagged with the graffiti, "Subscribe to PewDiePie," referencing a movement dedicated to preventing the YouTube channel from being dethroned by the Indian channel T-Series.
T-Series, yeah.
PewDiePie, whose name is Felix Kjellberg, has been the most popular channel on YouTube since 2013, but faces significant competition from T-Series. The Indian record label is expected to dethrone him in October with data analytics firm originally predicting the takeover would take place in October. The title of the world's most popular YouTube channel has finally changed hands last month when T-Series took over, but only for 8 minutes. Less than 15,000 subscribers currently separate the two channels, which boast more than 88 million subscribers. The sustained support campaign for PewDiePie now appears to be going to desperate lengths to prevent takeover, with the War Memorial, graffiti condemned by local residents. "I don't know what PewDiePie is, but based on that, it's terrible," one person wrote in Brooklyn subreddit. Mr. How the hell do you pronounce his name? Kjellberg previously stated he is not bothered if he is overtaken by T-Series. "I really don't care about T-Series. I genuinely don't." He has since gone on to urge his fans to do whatever they can to keep his channel on top. So I guess he's not really...
I guess he does care.
I mean, he's not really promoting that, but I mean, not a great thing. Surely you would say, like, you know, don't fucking go to stupid lengths like this bullshit.
I remember this happened before. People... I think somebody hacked into, like, some company's printer system and printed out, like, 1,000 pieces of paper saying, "Subscribe to PewDiePie," or something like that. And then, like, PewDiePie got in trouble. And he's just like, "You didn't do it." Like, his fans did it, but, like, he didn't say, "Go and do this thing."
Wow.
I mean, at what point do you have to, like, take responsibility for the actions of people you don't have any control over?
Do you like PewDiePie?
Not really, no.
No, not me either.
Don't really care for him. But,
do you know what I do care for? Is this interesting piece of news. Did you hear that there's a McDonald's cheeseburger scented candle?
No.
I think we need it.
I think we do.
Yeah.
I think we need to try this out.
The McDonald's cheeseburger scented candle has fans' mouths watering and it lasts ages. You can now... your home can now smell the aroma of McDonald's thanks to a candle with a 30-hour burn time.
I don't know, actually. Like, cheeseburgers, like, they smell good when you're about to eat them.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Don't necessarily smell that good like an hour after you've eaten.
No.
I'm not so sure about this candle.
Oh my God. It's not actually loading the article now. But there is a McDonald's cheeseburger setting.
I think that's all we need to know, Chris. Yep. I think any more information on that would just be
good.
A monumental waste of our time.
And I have another piece here. The over under toilet roll debate. So, you know the toilet roll and the holder. Do you put the toilet roll sheet over the front or down the back? What would you personally prefer?
Literally, I've never once given this a moment's thought.
I have, sadly. I'm a down the back kind of guy.
You like that? Yeah. I mean, that kind of makes sense to me.
Yeah, I think it looks neater.
It does look neater.
You can see it like...
But it's more convenient if it hangs over the front.
The front, yeah.
Easier access.
I don't. Well.
Let's not get into that.
This toilet roll debate has finally, apparently... finally been settled thanks to a 128-year-old manual. Okay. So, hang on.
Chris, do I need to mentally prepare for this?
Got a Jolly Bean stuck in my throat. It seemed like there was no answer in sight, but then suddenly there is. Choice magazine discovered a 128-year-old patent dating back to 15th of September, 1891. It helpfully included a detailed graph which was explicit in showing the paper being left up and over the roll rather than hanging under. According to the Mail Online, it's the wrong. Magazine wrote, "Here at Choice, we're fearless in finding truth in the most complex consumer concerns, which is why we set out to provide a conclusive answer to the controversial question of whether to hang your toilet paper over or under the roll."
It's too simple. You know what I want? I want there to be, and there needs to be an etiquette. It's like, At fancy parties, it has to sit behind a neat.
Oh, I would say the opposite. Fancy parties, it sits in front. But for the casual, casual toilet user, it has to sit behind.
No, for the casual toilet user, it sits in front. Easy access. We're not worried about presentation here, Chris. It's all about convenience. But if you're at a fancy dinner party, you want to see the place looking nice. You know what I mean? You want this thing hanging down the back, and you even want the corner kind of tucked in.
I was thinking that from the front. You know, you come down, you come into a nice taper or a nice point. Maybe. You know, and you're like, look at this. They've gone to great lengths. Maybe do a nice swan at the end or something.
I think it should be like table manners. I think you can only have etiquette. One roll on standby. You know, a lot of people have like all the rolls. For easy
how many,
access.
Is that a thing? How many would people have? Is that a how many?
Why stop at the over under thing?
That's nonsense. You should not just have one roll on standby. You should have loads of rolls on standby.
That doesn't look very pleasing though, Chris. Oh, it's a toilet roll.
I think it depends how you display them. What if you did like a six thing, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 in a nice triangle?
That's good. See?
Yeah.
See, we got
Or is that childish? Is that like a child came in and just built a pyramid?
We need to get to the bottom of this.
Yeah, we do need to get to the bottom.
New podcast topic.
Etiquette.
Toilet roll etiquette.
Toilet roll etiquette. Just everyday etiquette. Or the etiquette. Unwritten rules of I don't know. It's all there.
Toilet roll etiquette.
Okay, that's what we're going with. Toilet roll.
You think we have enough time to cover all that other stuff? We're focusing solely on toilet roll for like 3 hours.
Yeah,
we might get it done.
I think we should have 2 rolls of toilet roll here in the studio. And we should display them. Display them in front of the table.
One over, one under.
Yeah.
And we can get people to decide.
Yeah.
I know what we'll do. Like for over, subscribe for under. Anyone?
We're not getting any subscribers. I'll put up a Twitter poll. I'll put up an Instagram. I haven't done a poll in a very long time. I'll do one this evening. Over under.
Would you erect a poll, Chris?
Ooh, I'm good at erecting polls. I'm not going to go on with that because that's all we need. Do I have any other news? No, not really. No. Well. No. Nothing I need to touch on.
Part of me always thinks that you have enough like. Silly news in there to do us for like months.
Well, I have 36 tabs open here right now. Any one of them could be a silly thing. We don't know what are we going to find, you know? But no.
You're joking about the 36 tabs.
No.
You have 36 tabs open right now.
Yeah.
Forget toilet roll etiquette, Chris. You 36. Need to fix this.
No. I just get into a bad habit lately and I'm just like, I'm not closing that. I'll just open a fucking new one. It used to annoy me. It used to annoy me. I could only ever have this is phone etiquette.
Yeah, phone etiquette.
Okay, so I could only ever have one tab open at a time when I'm done closing. Then I was like, I can have 3 tabs open because I need one for like the football score.
Yeah.
Then I need one for everyday browsing, and then I always had one just for Amazon.
I have one for Amazon.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Then I thought, what if I try the Amazon app? And I did, and then I quickly deleted it because it was shit.
It's so much worse than the fucking website.
Exactly. And then we just built upon that.
It's just been
I was like, I might need to come back to that, so I'll leave that open. Previously, what I was doing was just screenshotting so I know what to come back. But then my gallery built up, and that's not good.
You gotta wipe that out then. That's
so, yeah, exactly. So 36 tabs is light, D.
36 tabs always reminds me of like my fucking essay days back in uni. Oh. It's like I had so many articles open, and I couldn't dare close it. Because I know, rightly, as soon as I do, I have to go back and get a fucking quote from it.
I think... What spurred this was actually my sister. I gave out to her once. I think she has like 400 or 500 tabs open. I don't. From the time she got her phone, she's never closed. She just doesn't close tabs. She just opens a new one. I think I'll order a tab. I swear to God, it's insane. And I'm like, but you never need them again. And by the time she goes back to like the 40th one, it's gonna take like a day to open that page anyway. So you may as well just open a new tab, a fresh tab. And sometimes it pops up, an older version of this page is available. Would you like to open it, or would you like to open a new one? So like, just close the tab, you know? But not me. 36 is good now. I'm 50 max.
You have a hard limit on 50.
We'll see what we are next week. But that's phone etiquette, yeah. Oh, by the way, are you a phone drain battery? Like, would you let your battery drain before you charge it? Or are you just like, I'm on 39%, I'm going to charge this bad boy?
Yeah, I've changed my perspective on battery. I used to be very conservative. I would always try and maximize my battery life.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd always have a decent amount left, just in case.
Yeah. Yeah,
just in case.
Of course.
But recently I've went the complete opposite. Now I'm using it how I want to use it. I'm not giving it, don't care
really
about the battery life whatsoever. Just to see if I can get it through a day like that. Ah. And normally it does me through work, and then I come home. I normally just throw it on the charger when I get home, regardless of what charge it's at.
Mm.
And that does me, boy.
I'm thinking about picking up a docking charger for my Samsung. It's like, you know, you just like set it onto the dock and it charges.
You should get one of those wireless chargers.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like and it can charge my watch as well. But I don't know if that's just novelty or...
No, you should do that.
Yeah. How does it work wirelessly, though?
It's really cool. There's, like, a coil in the back of your phone, and then, like, there's a coil in the thing, and just, like, it's like...
It's like a battery, basically?
No, it's like... What is it like? It's like Wi-Fi or, like, radio waves. It's just, like, sending...
Worth the investment, that, I think, yeah.
You know, like, a radio has, like, a tiny amount of energy because it's going so far? Yeah.
It's basically it's like sending charge into my phone.
It's that on speed, Chris.
Wow. Maybe I need this now.
Do you know, I once read this? We are so far gone on topic right now. But here's one for you.
This is what people like, I think.
You know
this
guy, podcast? Nikola Tesla?
Yeah.
He was going to try and build a station in New York and another one over in like England or Ireland or somewhere on the West Coast. Perfect. Let's get that in there. It's the heater, by the way.
Yeah, sorry. And, I just need some heat.
Ooh. He was going to do that. He was going to transmit electricity from like New York to Galway, I think it was.
Is that possible?
Yeah. Theoretically, that's possible. All you need is line of sight and like a fuckload of energy.
Holy. What would have happened if something had to cross through that energy?
Zap.
Really?
No. Probably pretty safe. I think
it's probably pretty safe. I think,
I think by the time it got to the other end, it would probably just like powered a light bulb. Just like.
Still. Still.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. Did I tell you I sat in a Tesla car in Florida? They have a Tesla store in the Florida Mall, and they have like a couple of different cars on show. You can sit in it. It's pretty like...
Is it just a car? A really nice car?
Yes and no. It's like... It's really nice car. Nice leather interior. Just looks the part, basically. But then inside, it's like a giant... Like a... I don't know what size. Maybe like a 28-inch... monitor just on the dashboard. Yeah, I'm not joking. It's the thing. It's bigger than that. It's fucking huge. It's about my laptop, like opened and then turned, flat screen sitting there, and that's everything is just controlled off of that. The whole car is just controlled off of that screen.
That's mad.
It's mental. Like it's really, really cool. It had
Elon Musk, you crazy bastard.
Yeah, there was no gear shift. There was pedals in one of them. There was no pedals in another.
Well, that's because they can do that whole self drive.
Yeah,
shit.
That's crazy.
That is scary.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
That's mad. Would you trust that?
Not yet.
Yeah.
But the idea of it is so appealing.
Yeah.
So like imagine having to go to work.
Just telling your car.
You just hop into the car.
Yeah. You could do so much.
Oh, you get so much done.
That's what I mean. Like you could have your breakfast in your car, basically.
Oh, yeah. I'm thinking I'd be sitting playing like the Switch.
Oh, imagine going on a long journey. Oh. Like
you need to go just so you could go.
Just so you could go. Yeah, just so you
sit in the car for a couple of hours.
Exactly. You take people into the car. No one drove. There was too much traffic. Oh, wow. Okay. Let's get back on track. Have you got any news this week?
I have one piece of news. Okay. The only thing I can remember was the
I'm going to go ahead and help myself. Sorry to Coke Zero Sugar. Yes, do you mind? Oh, they're nice and cold as well.
Well, they are cold. Glass that's bottles. It's cold in here.
Oh
yeah, what was the thing I was going to say? Yeah,
sexy.
So I have a piece of news about any Lord of the Rings fans. I'm sure you already know about the Amazon Lord of the Rings series that's coming.
Oh yeah,
that's coming out this year. Did you know that?
No,
it's coming out this year. Wow, so it's coming out like the tail end of this year, I think.
Not the fan I once thought.
So basically, as soon as Game of Thrones ends this April, by the way, this is going to be the next big thing for fantasy fans out there.
Uh huh.
But they recently confirmed that this show was going to be set in the...
Second Age?
The Second Age, Chris. That's heard correct. This. So the Second Age is like... I think it's like fucking 40,000 years or something stupid like that. So there's a bit of scope there, if you know where they're going to go with this.
Just a bit.
Yeah.
But a lot of shit happened in the Second Age, let me tell you.
But have you seen the Lord of the Rings films? Where it starts is basically the end of the Second Age. Mm-hmm. So it's the big fight against Sauron.
Yeah.
So basically we're going to be seeing, I imagine, we're basically going to be seeing Saruman. Saruman. No, Saruman was the white-haired dude.
Saruman. Oh, yeah.
Saruman. We're going to see him in his original
form.
Prime.
Oh, like okay. Optimus.
Top of his game.
Wow.
Yeah. That's going to be scary.
That is.
It's going to be class.
Have the
class.
See... When this first came out, I heard it was just about hobbits.
No. Probably not. There'll probably be hobbits in it, like, but...
I was thinking, is this just going to be, like, the adventures of the Shire?
I hope not. I probably would be hated for this, but Lord of the Rings, do not care for the Hobbits one bit. Oh. The Hobbit films? No.
I back you with that. I like it for the fact that it adds a bit of prelude to the Lord of the Rings. But like the 9 hours they took to prelude in three films could have been condensed into like two.
Yeah.
And that would have done one film, everything there, let's go.
No. Hobbits are fine.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more interested in the elves, men, even the...
Yeah. The alliance of men and elves. The dwarves?
The dwarves.
Mm.
I don't think of that word.
Mm. They played a bit of a part in the Hobbit movies, though.
Yeah. But in this, because they had rings as well. They had rings
of power. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Sauron.
Fred. Nine were given.
That's correct.
To the dwarf lords.
Perfect, Chris. We have an expert right here.
Yeah, well...
So you'll
I just watched that opening scene of like the Fellowship so many times when I find out who has the rings. I just need to know.
We're going to have you fact check everything whenever the show comes out.
I love the Lord. I love the whole lore. I love everything. I love the books. I love...
Have you read the books?
Yeah.
I'm going to read the books.
I've read the books. I haven't read The Hobbit.
No. I've read half of The Hobbit.
There's more books though. There's like three other books as well that he wrote that like
just tie in somewhere. Lore, yeah. History and stuff. Like
songs and shit. Like some of the songs are really cool. And they don't make it into the films, but hey ho. Off we go.
I'm kinda glad they don't make it into the films.
Yeah, true. A musical. Yeah. The Lord of the Rings, musical.
Featuring original.
Yeah, there's a lot of shit coming out this year. Films and
I know. This April you're gonna have the Lord of the Rings. Game of Thrones coming back and Infinity War Part 2 or whatever.
Endgame.
You're gonna have lots of stuff, Chris.
I need to catch up on my Marvel before that.
Captain Marvel is coming out soon.
It's out.
It's out.
It's out, yeah. It's out this week, yeah. Are you interested in that?
Not really.
No. Me either.
As you can probably guess.
No, me either. Oh, God.
But, yeah.
Have you seen Black Panther?
No.
Okay.
I should see it, I think.
I have it there if you want it. It's on Blu-ray. Yeah. Worth a watch.
Sure.
It's very good. It's very good, actually. You like Thor Ragnarok, don't you?
I liked it, yeah.
Okay.
Thor Ragnarok.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, we're good. we got a lot to talk about, dude.
I know.
Holy shit. That's your news?
That is that's
okay. Second Age, Lord of the Rings series coming out this year, set in Second Age. There's a new Formula One documentary on Netflix that's supposed to be brilliant. It's called Drive to Survive. I haven't heard it.
Uh-huh.
I haven't seen it, sorry.
I don't see.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it. What about the you know what we have to talk about is Tarantino's new film that he's doing.
What's it?
Okay. This is what I know. DiCaprio. I'm pretty sure McConaughey. And it's set in...
Oh, yeah. This is...
60s, isn't it?
Yeah. It's... Who do you call him? Serial killer. Charlie Manson.
Charlie Manson. That's who it is. Yeah. Charles Manson.
I guess called like American Summer of Terror or something like that.
Were you going to say Ted Bundy Files?
Yeah, it was.
That's Zac Efron, isn't it? He's playing... Yes. And he looks... That's going to be fucking fantastic. And Jim Parsons is in it as well.
Is he?
It looks... Oh, yeah. That's yeah, 100%.
Have you seen the Ted Bundy tapes?
No.
I was so blown away by that.
Did you watch them? Have you watched that? What would you call that other one everyone was watching there? Abducted in Plain Sight?
Oh, yeah. Bruno's talking about it.
Did you watch it? Just fucking weird.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of the memes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's the only reason I know.
There's another one. There's another one. Dirty John or something like that coming out. And it's like a documentary.
It's out, yeah.
And then there's a show as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's out, yeah. My God. Netflix is like just killing it with fucking like serial killer documentaries.
Crime drama.
Yeah, wow. Things. Do you watch any of that shit?
Watch Ted Bundy.
Criminal Minds.
It's a good show.
That's what I like. Anyway, getting back to it. This is the Empty Promise podcast, episode 73. Remember, you can find this podcast and all the previous podcasts over at youtube.com/XiteGaming. That is the umbrella of operations in which we operate under. You will find the video version a day later than the audio version. Which you will find on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, any podcast hosting service available on the interweb. Now you will find us. You'll still find us on SoundCloud, just episode 5. Or whatever that one was that we came back. We're there. Thank you to everyone who does follow us and listens to us. And D, I found out this week that we are still being picked up in Wheels.
Yes.
Talking to one of the girls, Ariane, who I did with my... I did my training in Liverpool with Home Bargains. And got talking about the podcast, and we are still being picked up in Wheels. She was to give us a couple of Welsh...
phrases,
sentences for us to stammer through. That didn't materialize. Maybe next week. Yeah, all right. Maybe next week we'll go for that. But Wales, Canada, Australia, Brazil, UK, and Ireland.
That's a pretty big reach.
We are. You draw a circle around that bullshit. That's a nice big area. The Antarctic.
Yeah, we're big in the Antarctic.
We need to be picked up in the Antarctic.
Yeah, but we're 14 pounds.
100%.
Currently subscribed.
But we have Welsh listeners still going these, so that's awesome. Question for you, a bit random. What's your Monster intake like nowadays?
It's fallen off a cliff.
Same.
A basically My God.
I wanted to ask you this last week, and I forgot clean about it.
There you go.
Yeah. Do you not drink Monster no more?
I try not anymore.
Are you trying?
Yeah. I choose so not am to I. Do it.
Yeah, see?
I'm getting a lot more Coke Zero.
We are changed men. I'm getting a lot more coffee. I don't know if that's better or worse, but it's fine.
I'm trying to just remove the caffeine dependency, Chris.
Really?
Yep. Don't like having wanting to have a Monster every day. I like to have one occasionally when I feel I'd like a little kick here.
Do you know what we have back in stock at the minute? Are these smaller cans of the White Ultra, which I think are just the perfect fit. Because the big cans, you're like, oh, I'm just it's a lot.
Remember, we used to complain about how actual Monster is too heavy.
Yeah,
and then Monster Ultra is
so light, so lighter. Crisp. It's like I'm not even drinking anything.
Now to me, Monster Ultra is too heavy.
Yeah.
I need something lighter. I need something lighter. Yeah.
Well, that's how Monster Ultra was created.
It's a big can, Chris.
People who drank it started complaining, and they started making it for designed around athletes and stuff. So hopefully that happens again and they make it even lighter. New Monster Ultralight or something like that. That'd be pretty cool.
It's just water.
Well, they have that. I have a lot of that Monster inside, the non-carbonated.
Yeah.
I use that stuff after gym and stuff.
Is it nice?
Yeah. The melon one is really good.
Oh, I like that.
Melon Madden. No.
Melon-kinny.
Melon something it's called. I don't know. It's good. It's good stuff. And it's like 4 bottles for a pound.
So. Well, that's good.
Yeah, 25p. Yeah, you take that.
Is there sugar in them, bad boys?
Yeah,
I'm not so big on my sugar consumption.
I know. If you get those at zero, that'd be pretty good. Do you know what I had in America as well? Was the Monster coffee, iced coffee? Very good, D. Very good. It's an iced coffee with the patented Monster Hit. I think they put it.
That just doesn't sound pleasurable at
Fantastic.
All.
Fantastic. Really, really good.
I'm very shocked by that.
I had one on the way to Disney, and it was it blew my mind. Okay. This week, we are getting into a new don't you fucking dare. This week, we are getting into a new series. This is the unsung heroes of the real world. The real life heroes, if you like. Superheroes.
The unsung world.
Unsung world. Basically, it's a series in which we want to talk about fantastic human feats, survival stories. What else?
Who should call it?
What?
Fantastic human feats and where to find them.
That was weird.
Okay?
That's brilliant. Fantastic human feats.
Feats.
And where to find them. That's fantastic. Write that down. That's what this podcast is, this episode's called. Fantastic human feats and where to find them. Wow. We're so good with words. So this week we've come up with, we found two stories. Well, you've
I have one.
You have one and I have one. So two stories, I guess. similar to the conspiracy series is what we're going to be doing every once in a while. I have a lot I want to talk about in this series. But we're going to kick it off pretty light today. And hopefully we inspire you to either go and pick up some books or watch some different movies or find out more about these people who have lived through enduring times.
These events, Chris.
Mm-hmm. Enduring times and where to find them. Do you want to start?
Sure, okay.
Yeah, okay. So tell me what we're going to talk about this week, Dee, because...
Well, Chris.
I like being... serenaded with your voice.
If you're a believer in hashtag space is fake, you're probably not gonna like my my pick for this week.
Well, I am a big believer in space is fake,
and I accept that. That's totally fine. Pardon why me. Wouldn't you? Hopefully this will do a little bit to make you believe otherwise, because this is one of the most incredible things to ever occur.
Really? Are you gonna make me a believer?
I think I am, Chris.
Okay.
I think I am. And if I can't do it, then I'm damn sure Tom Hanks will be able to.
Oh,
because the event in which I speak of is Apollo 13.
Wow.
Great. Apollo 13. Now a major motion picture.
Great shout.
So, yeah. So, what Apollo 13 was the third attempt by NASA to try and land people on the moon. So, Apollo 11 happened. That's Armin Hillstrong and the boys. and they touched foot on the moon, they came back, and that was all good. And then Apollo
supposedly.
12
supposedly.
Allegedly, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
We'll get to that next conspiracy series. Stay tuned. Click that link in the bio.
Apollo
smash that like button.
Sorry. Smash that like button. Apollo 12 was mainly forgotten because nothing
ever came of it.
Nothing amazing happened there.
Why?
No, people stood on the moon. I just don't know who it was or what happened.
So people did go back to the moon.
Yeah, apparently there's been five times, Chris. So Apollo 12 went back, that was fine. Then Apollo 13 happened, right? And first of all, right, a lot of people didn't even want to have Apollo 13 because people are superstitious and they don't believe in these things. They think,
oh, 13.
It's unlucky. It's a bad number.
Mm-hmm.
But then NASA, it's engineers. They're people who don't really believe that stuff. So they're just kind of like, nah, it's just a number. It's 13. We're going to do it.
Scientists don't believe in that shit.
No, they don't, Chris. They're just like, fuck that.
They can't.
They can tempt fate all they want. Yep. They're fucking NASA, okay?
Yeah.
Anyway. So, not NASA 13, Apollo 13. Jeepers.
Sorry.
You got that, Chris? You got that? You okay? I got my notes here, Chris. I'm going
to
read through
these. Yeah, no, notes are the way to go with this.
I have some background on them.
This is why the video version is good and bad. You get to see us stammer through our notes. If you just listen to the audio version, you're like, these guys know so fucking much.
You're just hearing bullshit. Oh my goodness.
I got a good one too.
It won't open.
Have you ever seen Apollo 13, the movie, guys? You should go and watch Apollo 13, the movie.
Have you seen Apollo 13, the movie?
Yeah.
Then you know all I'm going to talk about, so we'll just leave it there. No, I'm joking.
No, we will not. I love Apollo 13.
It is an excellent film.
Yeah.
And it does an excellent job. I'm sorry, I got to go pick up my notes here, try and get this.
That's fine. You take all the time.
Because, you know, I got to go find these notes and, you know.
I'll talk a little bit more about the Coke Zero that we're having in these glass bottles.
Okay, I found my notes. So
okay, thank God. I did not want to stammer through that, I swear to God. Wow, clutching at straws.
Okay,
there's a fantastic survival story in that Dangerous Book for Boys, I'm just realizing.
I'm going to pick it up.
No, that's fine. We'll get to that. That's a great book. We should talk about that book.
Yeah, we should stand that book up, Chris, from now on. All right. Apollo 13 was the seventh manned mission in the Apollo space program and the third intended to land on the moon.
Mm-hmm.
It was launched on April 11th, 1970. So this is like a year after, not even a year after.
Armin Nielstrom
and his boys stood on the moon.
Sorry.
April 11th. That's actually coming up. That's pretty close to coming.
The memorial
of that event. So basically, it was all standard procedure. They were doing some things slightly different, but it was basically what has happened two times already. And it's like, we're going to go land the moon, boys.
Collect rock samples and meteorites and stuff like that.
All that good stuff they do on the moon. Anyway, so the launch happened and it went up. As remember, there were some small anomalies with the launch, like one of the thrusters didn't go off, but they were able to compensate and everything was looking pretty good.
Yeah.
But then, approaching 56 hours into the mission, Apollo 13 was approximately 205,000 miles from Earth.
Jesus. After how many hours?
56 hours. En route to the moon. Approximately
800 miles an hour?
Yeah.
It's quick math.
Attaboy, you got this.
I got it. I have no idea if that's right.
Approximately 6.5 minutes after the end of a live TV broadcast... I should probably give the names of these guys.
Oh yeah.
Okay, so we got
Tim Hanks.
We got Jim Lovell or Lovell.
Oh yeah, that's who Tim Hanks was.
James A. Lovell Jr.
I think.
John L. Swigert Jr. And get this, Fred W. Hayes Jr.
Junior. All
I'm
juniors.
Not sure. This is the thing Americans love to call their kids after themselves. No offense, Americans.
We love America.
But yeah. Oh gosh. So Hayes, what was his name? I forget his first name. We're going by surnames from now on.
Junior.
Hayes Junior was in the process of closing out the LM, which is the lunar module.
Okay.
So basically, I'll give you, this is what's happened. You got the command module, which was set up in the rocket, then it connects with the lunar module, which is the part that's going to land on the moon.
Yeah.
And they're now connected up in space.
Yeah.
And he is... closing out the lunar module while Lovell was stowing away the TV camera. Houston flight controllers asked Swigert, who was the third guy, to turn on the hydrogen oxygen tank stirring fans, which is designed to sort of clear them out and give you a better reading of how much fluids and stuff you
blends
got left.
Blends the gases.
2 minutes later, the astronauts heard what they describe as a pretty large bang, accompanied by fluctuations in electrical power and the firing of the altitude control thrusters. The crew initially thought that a meteorite had struck the lunar module. Communications of telemetry to Earth were lost for 1.8 seconds before the backup stuff came back on.
Mm-hmm.
And basically everyone's kind of in panic mode about what's going on here.
So they were in their craft when this bang happened?
They're in what's called the command module, which is the main part. And this is where they're supposed to stay until two of them go down on the lunar module.
Okay, yeah.
And then all this stuff starts going off. Immediately after the bang, Swigert reports a problem, which Lovell repeated and clarified in those famous words. Yeah. Houston, we've had a problem.
Yeah.
He called it a main B bus undervolt, a temporary loss of operating voltage on the main electrical circuits. Oxygen tank 2, immediately read quantity 0.
Wow. So their oxygen was now running
out. One of their tanks was just empty.
Gone.
About 3 minutes later, the number 1 and number 3 fuel cells failed. Lovell reported seeing out of the window of the craft a gas venting of some sort into space. The number 1 oxygen tank quantity was gradually reduced to 0 over the next 130 minutes, entirely depleting the SM's control modules, whatever, okay. SM's oxygen supply.
So basically they were running out of oxygen.
Out of oxygen.
Gone. Wow.
Because the fuel cells generated the command and service modules electrical power, when oxygen tank 1 ran dry, the remaining fuel cell finally shut down, leaving the craft on the command module's limited duration battery and water. So basically because the oxygen was gone, their fuel cells couldn't work either. So everything
was just fields.
Everything.
Were they just floating then, basically?
Pretty much.
Wow. Just scary times.
The crew was forced to shut down the command module completely because they had very limited amount of power left.
Yeah.
And if they were to survive this at all, they had to save that for whenever they were coming back to Earth.
So they couldn't talk to command? Is that what it means?
Whenever they had to shut down the command module, so they would have no access.
Wow.
However, the crew was forced to shut down the command module and to power up the lunar module, which is the thing that's designed to take them down onto
the moon.
So basically what they did was they powered it up and everyone just huddled into this tiny lunar module.
That's right.
Shut down the command module.
Mm-hmm.
And they would sit in here for the duration of the flight. So, right, okay. First of all, this thing's only designed for two people.
Mm-hmm.
So
tiny little, it's like a tiny little metal compartment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're supposed to only be in this thing for...
Picture like one of those wee small submarines that they send down under the ocean. Uh-huh. Only this one's designed for space.
I got two of them.
Mm-hmm.
And three people are now sitting in it.
Wow.
That's
tight. In full fucking astronaut gear.
It only has oxygen for two people for 36 hours. Food for two people for 36 hours.
And it took them 56 hours to get to this point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They're dying.
And they're only have the capability to filter out carbon dioxide, which is what you're breathing out, for two people for 36 hours. So they got three people stuffed in here, and it's going to take approximately 118 hours to get up. So
basically they have 3 days, like 70 hours of just nothingness.
They're fucked, Chris. So this is what everyone sort of believed, is that they're in big, big trouble.
So what did they do, Dee?
They did whatever any reasonable human being would do, Chris. They tried to fix it.
Okay.
So back down on Earth, you had
Ed Harris.
NASA engineers and Ed Harris, of course. Like recreating the setup, the environment, like on like the same kind of equipment they had down there. They were trying to work out ways to reroute power to try and give them power.
They would have had to be so quick.
So they're on, like, obviously they're on a time limit for this as well. And the guys up there are kind of just like waiting for more instruction from back down in Houston.
Oh, it's so scary.
Hovering through Earth. Because they had the lunar module, it was like their lifeboat. And it was the only thing that was going to keep them alive. But they had those problems of low oxygen, low food. And the thing that was actually most pressing, the thing that was going to kill them, was the fact that when they were breathing out, the oxygen or the
carbon dioxide?
Carbon dioxide couldn't get like cycled out.
So it was just being kept in this little canister.
So they were just breathing in the carbon dioxide. Which is what like would kill you way quicker than not having access to oxygen.
Is that like carbon monoxide poisoning? No.
It's very similar, yeah.
Wow.
So they were basically like sitting in here stressing, trying to not breathe too heavily
not to stress. Yeah.
The heavier you breathe, the more trouble you'd be in regarding this.
Wow.
They had carbon dioxide filters from the command module. Yeah, the part that they'd shut down and wiped, like, completely exited out of. But it didn't fit. It wasn't the same like configuration as the ones you needed for the lunar module. So, what did they do to try and fix this, Chris? Remember if you've seen the film? Out of all the things in human existence that you can use to fix something whenever you're in dire
duct tape.
Need, they use duct tape.
Duct tape, yeah.
Not space duct tape.
Don't believe them much.
They used regular duct tape.
Regular duct tape. Wow. To just repair their, like...
They just, like, fix it in. Or? Fix it into, like, where the filter had to go.
Yeah.
And they just duct taped it on, rather than...
Duct tape is an absolute necessity.
It's the thing that saved these dudes, basically.
So they fix. So they're trying to get air back in. That's what they're fixing, or filter out carbon.
Filter out
the carbon dioxide, so they won't die of carbon dioxide poisoning. Mm. If that's a thing.
So this is good.
Mm-hmm.
Now they've worked out that they can use this duct tape. They can not die, right?
Yeah.
Now you have to deal with the fact that you're in a shuttle that's headed for the moon, and it's on a trajectory that's going to land you on the moon.
Mm-hmm. You don't want to go to the moon.
You don't want to go to
the moon. You want to go back to Earth.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, how do you move something when the engines are down and there's no power in the command module whatsoever?
Hmm. Good question. Kick.
Bum, bum. Basically, they're flying, hurtling towards the moon.
The moon.
And they have to use the lunar module, the thing that's supposed to land on the moon. Mm-hmm. They got to turn it around and they got to fire that engine to kick them off course.
Push them, yeah.
And send them around the moon, and then the moon's gravity will slingshot them back to Earth. And basically,
this is such a crazy feat. Like,
this is the part that really amazed me, right? Because they had never once thought that they'd have to use the lunar module to push the command module. The command module is much heavier, so they have no idea. Well, they'd have some idea, but they've never had to do the math. How much do we have to push this engine in order to move this? Command module, because they never considered it.
Nope.
So they have all these engineers down on the ground running all these like math equations through their head, trying to get a good idea about how long do we have to fire this for, what direction, all this other shit.
Well, this reminds me of, did you ever see the film The Martian?
Yeah.
You know, whenever they have to like use like the pull, the slingshot, like Matt Damon, isn't that what they're doing?
No, they slingshot the big ship. Yeah,
that's what they're doing. Yeah. Wow.
So they gotta basically they have to work all this stuff out. While the astronauts are hurtling at rapid speed, getting closer and closer to the moon.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this delay between them. And they have the lunar module, which is way, way less fuel than the main thing, because it's only supposed to land and come back up. So they've only got, like, they have a lot less margin for error.
Yeah.
Anyway, the NASA WID kids, don't doubt yourself when you've got NASA behind you, because they send them the instructions. The crew perform the instructions at the right time, for the right amount of time, send it off, and they change course. And now they're slingshotted around the moon.
So they head towards the moon, use the lunar module to power the command module around into the moon's gravitational pull, which kind of pulls them around, and then fires them back towards Earth using gravity, basically.
Exactly.
Wow.
Now, whenever they were getting closer to Earth, and they still had a bit of reserve fuel to make course corrections, you know, to fix what didn't go right, they basically didn't have to use that once because of the accuracy of the initial maneuver.
No way. So NASA were so accurate with their instruction to these guys who had never used the lunar, as you said, the lunar module to push the command module.
They did
their math. Accurate they didn't have to.
Yeah, they basically didn't have to readjust the whole way back.
Holy.
It was a 4-minute, 24-second burn.
Burn.
Only two more small course corrections were subsequently needed because it was so accurate.
Holy shit.
The lunar module consumables were intended to sustain two people for a day and a half, not three people for 4 days.
Yeah.
Oxygen was the least critical consumable because the lunar module carried enough to repressurize. Because it carried enough to like empty completely of oxygen and then refill it whenever they came back from being on the moon surface. And then basically the rest of this is talking about the carbon filters and trying to make things work. Whenever they had no filters left.
So they're now heading back towards Earth.
Hurtling
back towards Earth. They are still running out of oxygen.
Yeah. Well, they can't have enough oxygen. And now that they filter out the carbon dioxide.
Yeah. They are. They're pretty much just in collision.
Now they're just sitting in a tin can.
Yeah. Hurtling towards Earth.
Back towards Earth. And
into the Earth's atmosphere.
And whenever they get back towards Earth, then they have to head out of the lunar module, back into the main command module, and turn it back on and use the tiny amounts of power that's left, because the lunar module wouldn't survive going back to Earth, it would burn up. So they have to hop back in.
It's nuts.
And then they have to disengage unattach the lunar module and just send it off. I think they said something like farewell. And I think farewell Aquarius, you saved our life basically.
No way.
And then they left it out, it floats out in space.
I need to watch this film again.
Right?
Yeah.
And then they have to sit in the command module. Now this is the other messed up part about this. So maybe I didn't highlight enough of what happened initially, the initial problem. It was an explosion of one of the fuel cells.
Mm-hmm.
It was an oxygen tank that exploded, essentially. They thought they'd been hit by a meteorite. And there's an image out there. Whenever they initially removed the tanks, all the storage stuff with the tanks and stuff from the command module, you could see a massive hole in it. It's like a bomb had went off.
No way.
And that's basically what happened. It was all this oxygen. There was a faulty wire in there somewhere. And when they flicked that switch, kaboom, it just exploded.
Holy shit. Were they lucky that it didn't
this is it.
Just completely kill them?
People were
or blow into the...
People didn't know how much damage was actually done to the command module, because they could never see it because they were always inside of it or in the lunar module, which was attached to it.
Holy shit.
Didn't know if the heat shields and stuff had been damaged or if whenever, because it's going to come down at some speed back into the Earth's atmosphere.
Yeah.
It's just going to heat up so much. So a lot of people were stressing as it was coming right back down that it was just going to explode coming back into orbit or come back down to Earth. But basically just sheer luck.
Sheer luck brought them back.
That there was nothing, it held up well enough that whenever it came back down, went through the heat shields, everything went as expected. The parachutes, they went as...
Yeah, deployed.
They deployed as expected. People were worried that they had frozen up because the power hadn't been there to keep them warm the whole time in space.
Holy shit.
Miraculously, they splashed down back to Earth.
In the ocean?
In the ocean, yeah. Everything deployed as usual, as expected.
What an unbelievable series of events for these guys.
Well,
did that put a hold on any further space travel?
It did not.
No?
No. The subsequent NASA Apollo programs have been planned, and they went ahead as usual.
Wow.
There was a lot of work done to find out what exactly went wrong here.
Yeah.
Sort of ensure it never happens again. What was the thing? So basically, after all of this, there was a lot of fanfare about these guys because they'd basically survived the unsurvivable.
Mm-hmm.
This is actually really interesting. Because Apollo 13 followed the free return trajectory whenever it was going around the moon. So basically, a slingshot doesn't have to use any engine to get back.
It's free.
Because it was doing that and it wasn't intended to. Its altitude over the lunar far side was approximately 100 kilometers or 60 miles, greater than the orbital altitude on the remaining missions. So all the other missions that went to the moon, they hovered around the moon much closer than what these guys did.
Yeah.
And because the moon was almost at apogee during the mission,
what's apogee?
Basically the furthest it can be from Earth. A combination of these two effects ensures that Apollo 13 holds the absolute altitude record for a manned spacecraft, reaching a distance of 400,171 kilometers from Earth on 7/21, April 14th, 1970. So these three men have been the furthest
people away
of all time.
But sheer dumb luck.
Holy
moly, D. That's incredible.
Isn't it?
And they all survived and all lived. They all survived.
The Apollo 13 mission was called a successful failure by Lovell because of the successful safe return of the astronauts, but the failed lunar landing. It has also been termed NASA's finest hour.
It's incredible.
Which I kind of agree with because even though everything went wrong,
they still managed to bring these guys with their math and calculations, bring three men home safely by slingshotting them around the moon. That sounds ludicrous when you say it like that.
They used the moon's
gravity to slingshot them back to Earth.
And they survived.
That's unreal. That's unbelievable. McConaughey should have had NASA on his side.
McConaughey should be in that film.
Kevin Bacon's in that film.
Is he?
Yeah, he's one of the three. Kevin Bacon.
He's kind of the arrogant one, isn't he?
Tim Hanks. And who's the third one? I forget that guy's name. but I know him.
You know him. Yeah. I have to watch that fellow again.
He's the coach in Remember the Titans, that guy. Oh, fuck, I forget his name.
It's too late. It's gone.
Yeah.
Excellent film.
Unbelievable.
Excellent
story. I'm going to put this down as the... So these are our unsung heroes list. And this is the... I was going to write the cast of Apollo 13, but I'm going to write the crew of Apollo 13. NASA's... What is it? Greatest...
This is greatest moment, I know.
No, NASA. What was that other one? Greatest.
NASA's finest hour.
Well, and what was it? What was
a successful failure.
NASA's successful failure. Brilliant start to it, D. I think these men are worthy of that list.
They did it, Chris.
Thank you. I'm going to take you. I'm going to holy sheet. I just looked right there and it just went white with snow. Yeah. Speaking of snow, this is a nice segue into mine. Yeah. So I'm going to take you back from space, back to Earth. I'm going to take you back to 1985. And I'm going to take you to the Peruvian Andes. Do you hear of Touching the Void? No?
I think so.
It was a book that was wrote by a mountaineer, two British mountaineers, but one of them called Joe Simpson. He recounts his events that happened in the Andes with climbing partner Simon Yates, which he recounts their successful but disastrous and nearly fatal climb of the Sihula Grande in the Peruvian Alps in 1985. It's a 20,813 foot climb that they did, which is pretty remarkable. Like, it's awesome. They reached the summit of this mountain before, I think it was like the west face of the Sula Grande. Two British, I can't pronounce that at all. So basically they reached the summit. So they're climbing in the Andes. They reached the summit. And as many of these stories go, and you always hear from Everest and K2 and all these big climbs, it's not the climb up that kills you, it's the descent.
Yeah.
The descent always like way tougher than going up. And the exact same thing here. Upon the descent, Simpson, slipped down an ice cliff and off at the face of the cliff. And when he landed, he crushed his tibia into his knee joint. So your tibia is basically your shin. So he landed his foot and pushed his shin up into his knee joint. So just completely shattered his leg. I can see the snow in the background. This is the perfect setting for this story. Broke his right leg, basically. And the pair whose trip had already taken longer than intended due to bad weather, adverse conditions, having to reroute a couple of times, had now run out of fuel for their stove, which means they couldn't heat their food, but more importantly, they couldn't melt basically ice to get water. For drinking water. With bad weather closing in and daylight starting to fade, they needed to descend to the glacier below. Yeah, it was the glacier they're trying to get to, so they get drinking water, which is 3,000 feet below them.
Fuck.
Which is a big climb. So
particularly with a broken leg.
So the two of them are like linked up, you know, like with their climbing ropes, so that obviously in the bad weather and stuff that they don't lose each other or whatever way climbers do it. I'm not too familiar with climbing strategies or techniques, but they're always like linked together, basically all their equipment on them. And this guy Yates proceeds to lower the guy Simpson, who has a broken leg, off a cliff face. By tying two big massive lengths of rope together in the middle to make one long rope. I think the rope they said was like 300 feet or something, like something crazy. So he's lowering him down, but because he tied the two knots together, it made a knot in the rope, which there should never be. And the knot couldn't go through the little, the little metal like clip or whatever it is. I don't know what it's called on Simpson's harness. And he then had to stand on his good leg to give Yates enough slack on the rope to thread it back through this lowering device that they had to enable them to lower him, basically. Storm conditions were picking up and it was now dark. And he inadvertently lowered Simpson to this cliff. And he thought, basically, because he felt slack in the rope, and he thought he couldn't see him and he couldn't hear him. And he thought that because he felt the whatever on the rope, that this guy was safe. He had transferred his weight. Oh, he was ready to start doing whatever he had to do, basically. He could not hear Simpson. He could only feel that Simpson had his weight on the rope. He attempted to ascend the rope using a different type of knot. But because his hands were at this point badly frostbitten, he was unable to tie the knots properly and accidentally dropped one of the cords required to ascend back up the rope. Mm-hmm. The pair were stuck in a very bad situation at this point. Simpson, with a broken leg, could not climb up the rope, and Yates could not pull him back because the cliff was too high for him to be lowered down. They also could not communicate with each other at this point. So there, picture this. This guy's hanging over a cliff, got a broken leg. He needs to get further down below. The rope's not long enough. He cannot climb back up with the broken leg. This guy can't get down to him. They cannot communicate with each other. So they're pretty much just dangling in the void. No man's land. They remain in this position until it was obvious to Yates that the snow around the like little clip, or I forget what it's called. It's called like a belay or belay. It's something stupid
that's a classic image that we clip.
Yeah, that we clip.
All rock climbers and stuff use it.
The snow was getting too much around it, and he knew he had to act. And it was going to give out. And because the pair were tied together, inevitably it was going to pull the two of them pretty much to their death. So this guy Yates, who was on the high ground, had to make the decision to cut the rope.
Yeah.
So he couldn't hear Simpson. At this point, he thought he's gone.
Dead.
So he made the decision. He cut the rope, and Simpson plummeted straight down off the cliff. He plummeted down the cliff into a deep crevasse, exhausted, and now suffering from hypothermia. Yates then dug himself into a snow cave to wait out the storm. The next day, he continued to descend the mountain by himself, thinking that his friend was dead, basically. When he reached the crevasse, he realized the situation that Simpson had been in and what had happened when he cut the rope. After calling for Simpson and hearing no reply, Yates made the assumption that Simpson had died and continued down the mountain alone.
God.
So
did he realize then that he'd cut the rope?
Yeah.
God. Yeah. And he knew that his friend might have been alive when he cut the rope?
No, he didn't know. At this point, he didn't know that he cut the rope. So basically, the next day, sun came out, let's just say, and this guy Yates, who had dug himself into a snow cave to avoid the storm, went back down to assess the situation, see where his friend would have been. But because he fell through a crevasse, he couldn't see him. No communication with him. He just assumed he was gone, dead, whatever. So he continues to proceed down the mountain alone. Simpson, however, was miraculously still alive. He had survived the 150-foot fall despite his broken leg and landed on a small ledge inside the crevasse. And when he eventually regained consciousness, he discovered that the rope had been cut and that Yates had obviously presumed that he was dead. So he's now getting all this together in his head. Okay, he thinks I'm dead. He's obviously gone on without me.
Yeah.
And therefore he had to save himself. It was impossible for him to climb up to the entrance of the crevasse because of his leg, because of the overhang in the ice, and because of the rope the way it was. So the only choice he had then was to continue to lower himself deeper and deeper, further into this crevasse, and hope that he found just a small opening anywhere in the mountainside, somewhere to come back out. He was doing all of this with hypothermia, no food, no water, a completely shattered leg. In the movie, he's pulling himself just along the snow, and then he's like pushing himself, you know, on his ass or on his stomach. It's snowing, the wind, the frost, everything is just getting to this guy. He found another entrance and climbed back onto the glacier via a steep snow slope. From there, he went on to spend a further 3 days without food, water, and crawling and hopping 5 miles back to the base camp.
Jesus Christ.
5 miles down through this mountain back to this camp that they had to get to on the glacier. This involved navigating the glacier, which was scattered with more crevasses. Exhausted and almost completely delirious, he reached base camp only a few hours before Yates intended to leave the base camp and return to civilization. His survival in the situation is widely regarded by mountaineers among the most amazing pieces of mountaineer lore. And what came out of this whole thing, D, afterwards was these two guys completely fell out with each other. Like, there was no love lost between them.
Because the guy caught it.
I think one of them was actually on the Late Late Show maybe years ago. I think you can still watch that interview and he talks about it. But he got back to, I think he got back to camp while the other guy was there. He came crawling into the camp. But basically he survived. So he survived his broken leg, his broken injury. He climbed down 5 miles through the, like, over the most, like, inhumane, inhospitable, like, landscape known to man, through, like, off a cliff, basically off a mountain, thousands of feet up, to make it back to his base camp 3 days later. No food, no water, no nothing in those conditions. And live to tell the tale, basically.
That's incredible.
Unbelievable.
That is just sheer willpower.
I cannot urge people enough to go and watch, like, just reading that kind of synopsis of the whole thing out does it no justice. You have to watch the show called Touching the Void. You can watch it on YouTube. I'm pretty sure you can probably get it on Netflix or somewhere now, but I watched it on YouTube a couple of years ago and it's unbelievable. It's only like an hour and something long. Unbelievable, D.
There's a book about it as well?
There is a book about it, because the movie then that they made it was an adaptation of the book that the guy wrote.
That's madness.
Yeah. Simon Yates.
What do you have to be thinking to be lying there going, my friend's gone?
Yeah, exactly.
I got a broken leg.
Yeah.
I'm like so far away from civilization.
It's like it's the whole fight or flight thing, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
You know, it's you're either going to die or you're just going to go as far as you can before you do die. So you might as well just give it your best shot. Yeah. You know what I mean?
God, the pain.
I can't even imagine the pain, D, in his leg. And the fact that he went in those conditions. Like, that pain in that leg in just like regular weather would have been fine. Yeah. But maybe that's what saved him, though. The cold.
Just
numbing it just completely. I mean, he was frostbitten. His nose, his cheeks, everything. God. No foods, no energy. I can't even. That's just horrific. And that's in the Andes as well. I always thought this happened in like Everest or K2, but that's in the Andes. Which, did you ever hear about, what do you call that film? It's just called Alive, about plane crash. It also happened in the Andes. I might touch on that at some point in this series as well, about the football team who actually resorted to cannibalism to survive in the Andes. But that's for something else. Simon Yates, though.
Simon Yates,
an incredible man.
And Simpson. Which one is... No, Simpson.
Oh, no, sorry. It's Simon Yates was the guy who cut him. It's...
he cut him.
No.
He cut him so bad.
No, have I got that wrong now? It's,
no, Simpson was the guy who broke his leg.
Yeah, Simpson was the guy that broke his leg. Simon Yates cut the rope.
Son of a bitch.
Yeah.
Are they still completely?
I don't know. Actually, I must lock that one up.
It'd be a tough thing to forgive someone just like.
Would you forgive me if I cut the rope? I couldn't hear you. You know.
Yeah, well, you could have tried harder, Chris.
I mean, like, I couldn't hear you, and I was inevitably going to be pulled to my death.
Yeah, this is the thing. I thought because they were both like clearly professional mountaineers, whatever you call it.
Both British as well.
And both Brits, they would know like that. In that circumstance, like,
you have to do whatever.
You can't just stand there and hold on to your friend until you freeze to death.
No. Do you remember that in The Day After Tomorrow? There's a similar kind of scene.
Day After, which part?
You know when, isn't it Dennis Quaid, who's the dad, is going after Jake Gyllenhaal, and they're making their way over like the top of a...
Oh, yeah,
is it like a glass roof or something, and the friend falls,
yeah,
and he has to cut the rope? Jesus. I think that friend who cuts the rope is also one of the astronauts in Apollo 13. This could all be linked.
That's amazing.
That could be really well linked together, yeah. Actually, yeah.
It's like the Kevin Bacon game, except
but we did better.
Disaster films.
That was just a quick insight into who I think should be on our unsung heroes list.
I wholeheartedly agree, Chris.
100%. Touching the Void, if you're not going to read it, just watch it. There's an audiobook, you could listen to that as well.
I think I read the sequel to that. Touching Cloth.
Of course you have. Our first two in the unsung heroes list, the Apollo 13 cast crew,
fantastic human feats, and where to find them, Chris,
and
one in space and one in the Andes, apparently.
And Simpson.
Hard to believe.
I like
to do these things.
I don't. This is what I was talking to my dad about this as well. What do you think inspires people to actually want to climb big shit? Like, how do you even get into that? How do you think? Like, I just want to climb Everest, or I want to go as high as I can, because
I think it's two part. I think one part is like,
do you think
humans just like to just
Do you start off like hiking or something and just be like, I want to go higher?
Do you mean like how do you do it or why do you do it?
Both, really. Like,
I think people want to do it because it's a serious sense of accomplishment. It's like, why do you run a marathon? Why do you like do any of that stuff? Why do people do the Olympics? Why do you push yourself that hard?
Funny you should say that. There was a show on last week. I don't know if you've ever seen it before. It won a load of Oscars at or not Oscars. It won a load of awards at what do you call it? Like Cannes, isn't it Cannes Film Festival?
Or was this Free Solo?
Yeah, did you watch it?
The rock climbing. I didn't watch it, no, but I've heard about it.
Holy shit, man. Unbelievable.
You seen it?
Yeah. It was on National Geographic last week. That guy claimed that cliff face in Yosemite freehand.
That's mad.
It is the most insane claim I've ever seen in my life. And he's practicing it, you know, months and months in advance, always with ropes. And he gets to the same point every time and he keeps slipping on the ropes. I don't know what it took for him in his head to just think this one time I got this and go for it and get to that point and know it was the hardest. If he got by that part, he knew that he more or less had it in the bag. He still had like a couple of thousand feet to climb, but that part was just like something else. It was like a chimney climb almost he had to do. And it was just like, how do you even fathom? Like, yeah, where
do you decide, like, I'm willing to risk my life to do this?
He slipped that many times with ropes. Like, how do you not get to that point and just think, no? With a full film crew, you know, on the floor.
This is because he was wearing the ropes that he couldn't do it. Think of the end of Batman, The Dark Knight Rises. This thing.
Yeah.
You got to free yourself.
Rise.
Yeah.
Rise.
You have to have the threat of death.
Maybe that's what
in
it
order
is.
To do it.
Maybe that's what it is. Maybe that's how this guy got down the mountain. Maybe. Threat of death. Touch of death. I don't know.
Touch of cloth, man.
Touching the void.
Incredible. Incredible stories, to be fair.
Let's move to the closing of the podcast this week. Do we look very dark?
It's been a very dark episode. We're talking about a very sad and
that's grim, isn't it?
Terrible thing.
Wow.
Yeah.
Closing of the episode. Thoughts and opinions. I thought I had something else to talk to you about. Matthew McConaughey. I need to watch Matthew McConaughey films, D. I'm in a Matthew McConaughey kind of mood.
Good. That's good.
I think I'm going to start rewatching. Actually, no. I'm going to start rewatching True Detective soon. But I have a couple of films in there that I need to get through. I'm going to start them tonight. One of which now has to be Apollo 13.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I actually can't wait to watch it.
What a good movie, actually. I have to get through that. What else? I don't know. I was like on a YouTube binge the other night just watching like stupid stuff and all these movies kept popping into my head. I was like, I better watch that. I also need to catch up on my Marvel. And I'm not going to play anything this week, let's be real. I'm just not. I just have no heed to get into anything at the minute.
On Friday, The Division 2 comes out. I'm going to get it.
Maybe that'll get you.
I'm going to play it. Yeah. Maybe. Yeah, hopefully. Hopefully. Yeah. Probably play some Apex and some backups.
Do you have anything nice to eat this week? Tell me. Tell me all about it.
I had the best steak I've ever had.
Oh, was that today?
No.
Oh, okay. Tell me about this steak.
It was in Belfast.
Oh.
In a little place called, not little, it was a pretty big place, called Sticks and Stones. Ever heard of it?
Did they break your bones?
It's a steak and seafood place.
Oh, brilliant.
Anyone in Belfast, you may have heard of this place, and if you haven't, I definitely recommend you go try it. Even if you're not in Belfast, I'd recommend you go try this.
Okay.
Next time you're up and about that way.
Mm.
So basically, they do really, really, really good steaks. Delicious, like.
Okay.
But they have a gimmick.
What's the gimmick?
And you may or may not like this. I think you like this, actually. So they bring you down your plates and stuff, and then your steaks... Or in the kitchen, the chef will season them and stuff, and he'll what do you call that thing? He'll sear the steaks on the outsides, but he'll leave them uncooked, and they bring it down to you on a stone which is heated to 400 degrees.
So you're basically cooking your own steak to whatever way you want it.
Exactly. They recommend you take the steak off, you cut it into slices, and you just drop them on the stone and let them sizzle something like 30 to 40 seconds if you want it like medium rare, and you bring it down to you.
Holy
red
shit!
Red hot, right off the.
Right, that is a great kind of gimmicky marketing.
Yeah.
That's brilliant.
I thought it was mainly gimmick, but then when I was eating it, I was like, the very first bite I had, I was like, this is the best steak I've ever had in my life.
Really?
And I was like, is that the seasoning or is it the fact it was cooked here in front of me or what?
Was it like a nice salty kind of, just complimented the meat?
It was so good.
Oh,
the seasoning, it definitely was, like a lot of it was to do with the seasoning because I found towards the end of the steak, you could see the seasoning sitting like cooked on the stone. And I was like, this doesn't taste as good as it did at the very start.
Because the seasoning is on the stone.
Exactly.
Wow.
But holy shit, it was good.
So what size of steak was it? Or like, do you pick, is it just generic steak or is it different types?
I had an 8-ounce fillet. You can get T-bone, you can get sirloin, you can
T-bone is the wave.
There you go.
T-bone.
And you can get it on the spoon, or if you prefer, you get the chef cook it for you.
Get it. So he will cook it for you.
You just ask. Oh, wow. But they say, this is how we do it here normally, is just we give it to you on a stone, you cook it to your own tastes, whatever.
I like that. And what way, is the seafood the same, or half cook your
fish? I wouldn't know, Chris, because I don't eat seafood.
So what do you get? Was it just steak, or do you get any kind of sides?
A couple of sides.
What do you get?
Laura says the mash was delicious. I thought the mash was grand, it was fine.
Just grand.
Just mash. The chips they do, right? They're like, imagine you take a spud and you quarter it into like four pieces, but like chips, like length.
Yeah.
And then they just chip, they cook, put that in a frying pan.
Ooh.
Really, really well cooked. They're fluffy the whole way through. I was astounded. I was like, how have you done this?
Like, are they crispy-ish, like wedges?
They kind of are, no, but they're not. They're not, Chris. They're definitely chips. They taste like chips, but then you get, and then you have like in the middle, like really floury, like a wedge. And I'm like, what's going on? It's great.
That sounds terrific.
Look at this. Mm. There's a sauce on it as well.
Ooh.
It's like a, what is it? I forget.
Is it like a...
It's like a mayo and like burger sauce or something mix. Ooh. It's really good.
This sounds very nice.
I was really impressed with that side as well. And then, but then there wasn't many starters that appealed to us, and we didn't really like the look of the desserts. I think it's really just steak.
Steak, yeah, yeah.
As their main thing.
That's it. I prefer a place to do that, that they just go, this is what we're known for, you know, rather than try to like accompany everybody and lose out on how good their steak is. Do you know what I mean?
That's it.
What's it called? Steak?
Sticks and Stones.
They should have called it Steaks and Stones. I'm sorry. I like that kind of stuff. You know, I like puns. I like wordplay, especially with food.
That's a fair thing.
Sticks and Stones. Whereabouts is it in Belfast?
Just it is near City Hall.
Okay,
it is very near City Hall. It's on Queen Street.
I knew a couple of people who listen to the podcast that may be very interested in that. So there you go. You're welcome, ladies and gentlemen.
Excellent place. I've heard mixed things about it. Some people don't love the whole cooking on a stone thing.
Really?
I liked it. I didn't initially like it. I wasn't even going to do it. I was going to, no.
Just
I
don't want to have chef the
stress of cooking my own steak.
Yeah, I get you. But then if I wanted to cook, I'd stay at home.
This is it. Mm. But then when the girl was like, the waitress was like, no, you just cut it up into slices and you cook each piece whatever way you want. Like, it only takes a couple of seconds. I'm like, okay, I'll do this. I was very glad I did. It was Laura's recommendation to do that.
Very nice. Did you get dessert at all? Or did you just skip the dessert? Okay.
Went over the road to Tim Hortons.
Oh, well done, sir. Did you get some Timbits?
Timbits, yes. Timbits.
Oh, that sounds terrific. I myself haven't had much good food. I'm just back eating. I don't even have an appetite at the minute.
Do you know?
No.
God.
I'm struggling with my food.
You're just eating just
I'm still eating like I'm trying to get like a lot of like nutrient dense food.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why I don't have an appetite. Maybe I'm just getting full in this kind of stuff. I'm eating a load of fruit and a load of vegetables.
Well, that's good. That's never a bad thing.
No. I'm not eating like bad food or
you
shit.
You should go vegan for Lent.
No. I'm just not going to do that, Dave. I'm sorry.
Are you off anything for lunch, Chris? You taking a plunge this year?
Maybe subconsciously.
That's a definite podcast. That's a definite no.
I don't know. No, not really, no. Are you?
Nope.
No. Did you go on anything?
No. I mean, I'm eating healthier-ish.
I'm making more use of my time during the day.
That's good.
Being a lot more like conscious about my time management.
I'm being more active.
Good.
I got this thing. I'm more active.
Yes, so you do, yeah.
How's that going? Tells me to get up.
Get up and move.
Yeah. It's going good.
Get up and shake it. Yeah.
I keep paying attention to how active I am, paying attention to my heart rate during the day.
That's good, yeah. I've started taking vitals using like my phone.
That's good.
Heart rate, blood pressure, stuff like that.
I've started caring a lot more about my sleep as well. It tells you if you've got a good night's sleep or not.
I'm not sleeping at all at the minute. So I'm waking in normally very, very early in the morning. So I'm using that time to sometimes get workouts in before I even go to work.
Oh, fair.
So it feels like...
Actually, Mommy was saying she's seen you running on the Man of War recently.
Yeah, she did indeed. I've taken up long distance running. Well, I just run for a lot. So
that's good.
Yeah, I got my first 10 miler tomorrow. I'm going to go 10 miles tomorrow.
Why?
I did 8 last week and I was just like, I could probably push that to 10 just to see if I can do it.
10 miles is good. You should do that and then you should go do a half marathon.
Yeah, probably will.
Put that up as your next goal.
I was
Why, Chris? Why do people climb mountains? Why do they run marathons, Chris?
I actually have, I have set myself up for the Connemara Marathon in April.
Where's that?
Connemara in Galway. So I'm going to go up and do it.
Not a full 23 miler.
26 miler.
I knew that.
Yeah, you knew that. So
damn it.
But I'm not training for it if be like, I'm just going to run as far as I can here.
And run as far as you can there.
Pretty much, yeah.
That's a fair strategy.
But yeah, I cycle it. I've given up on like a lot of weight training and stuff. I'm just doing a lot of body weights. And then I run a lot. I cycle a lot.
It's good cardio.
Yeah.
Good health.
Yeah. It's good. Like, it's as good as a walk. You know the way whenever you go for a walk, you come back and your head's just clear and you feel like you're just ready to just take in something? I feel the same thing with running now. So I'm just like, that's really good.
This is one of the things I read recently. It's like, people can't objectify how good it is to go for a walk. It's one of these things that's like, if you're sitting at work, and you go, I go for a walk for lunch, or I could just go and get a food and sit up in the canteen and eat it.
Mm.
A lot of people would be like, well, I'd like the walk, but I don't think I'd like it that much.
Yeah.
Whatever, I'll just do the food thing. But then when they go on the walk and they're coming back, they're like 10 times happier that they went for
that
the walk.
That they went for the walk, yeah.
Than they did lunch. But whenever they sit back down the next day and they go, will I go for a walk or I go for lunch? They're just like, they see it as about equal again.
Right. So it's
one of those things you only really gain the benefit of it
after you do it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Or while you're doing it.
Good.
Apparently the first 5 minutes of you doing it, you're like immediately way happier than you would have been otherwise. Yeah. Walks, and that goes up like 5 times if you're surrounded by greenery.
Really?
It doesn't matter if you're in a park in the middle of a bustling city.
Park, forest.
And it's just got a couple of trees.
Yeah.
It immensely helps to
that's
be
mad.
Surrounded by greenery.
That's mad how that happens.
And it's crazy.
I like that.
It's crazy, right?
Like
that the BBC.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Class. Not really.
And it helps your productivity.
Does it?
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Do you take an hour walk? Okay, you take a 20-minute walk.
Yeah. You take a 4-hour walk, like a long hike.
You may think you're missing 20 minutes of work, we'll say.
Yeah.
But you come back, you're way more focused for the next, 30 minutes than you would have been had you just done 50 minutes of straight work.
I get that. Wow.
You're welcome.
That's why, I think that's why Japan and places like that are so widely regarded as being like some of the most productive workers and people.
Oh, yeah.
They do a lot of that like Tai Chi and fucking all that kind of stuff like during work. Like it's mandatory in their work to take part in this
that's
stuff.
That's interesting.
You know, like midday they'll all go for like a fucking 1 hour like yoga
pretty sure
session.
Japan has stupid working hours though as well.
Yeah,
they
probably
work very late.
Yeah. But I'd say they're not nearly as stressed as like Americans are.
I don't know, because I hear about Japan and China and stuff. It's like,
actually, in Japan they have the suicide forest, so
yeah,
they probably are.
Apparently, you have the option of working like late and stuff. Yeah. But if you don't work, people are like, "Why aren't you working?
Why aren't you working?
Why aren't you a respectable human being?"
Wow,
the culture of work. Germany. When I was in Germany, they're very much like that. They're very productive, but they're lackadaisical nearly.
Wow.
Take our walks and we'll take our breaks.
Class. I like
and
that.
And we come back
like
and we work.
Yeah, like in France, they have like a 2-hour lunch break.
That's mad.
Just because they believe in sitting down with friends, family, enjoying fine food and wine on their lunch hour.
Hmm.
That's, you know, they eat like such like greasy fucking, you know, they're eating like duck and pâtés and stuff, like rich, rich foods. Like, and you're like,
in Italy,
wow.
They often don't start eating until well after midnight.
Where did I hear? Where, what's that? Oh, that's The Office.
It is The Office.
That's
great
the
catch.
Dinner party.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Yeah, that's right.
You watched it recently.
It's such a good episode. That's right. No, what I've started doing is making like a list of just all the shit that I heard this. You just make out a list of all the stuff that you don't want to do and all the shit that like either scares you to do or you've just been putting off for so long. And then you just, the first couple of steps is like the hardest to get stuck into it. And then you eventually start doing it. And it's called like callousing your mind, where like you're just training yourself like, no, if I can do this, I can pretty much like, you know, I can do a lot of other stuff. So I started with cold showers. I was like, I'm just going to.
Don't want to do a cold shower.
No, do not want to do. Now, all I've been taking is cold showers and I enjoy it. And I come out of the cold shower and I'm like, it's like that thing. It's like at the time I'm like, oh God, I had like a cold shower. And then I come out of it and I'm like,
so glad I did that.
Just so glad I took a cold shower.
I hate cold showers. I love hot showers.
Same, hate them.
One of my greatest pleasures in life, I've recently realized this, it's just
hot
water.
Steam. Yes, like the steam. Yeah.
I sometimes stand at the taps in the bathroom for like a good minute. Just keep my hands in the hot water.
So nice, isn't it? It's just a nice feeling.
But a similar related thing to what you're saying there about callousing your mind.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the things that we procrastinate on, a lot of things that we put off, after literally 5 minutes of starting it, mm-hmm. your immediate reaction is, oh, it's not so bad.
Yeah, exactly. It's the thought of doing it. Yeah, the thought of starting it.
And it's the hardest thing ever because it's so hard just to start it.
100%.
But once you do, it really is so much easier to keep going. You go for an hour, no problem.
Exactly. A couple of those runs or the cycles I've been on, the first like 5 minutes and it's like sleet or snow and it's dark and it's first thing in the morning and I'm just thinking, I could just be back in bed. It's my day off. Why am I doing this? Within the first mile, I'm like, okay, this is fine. I like this. You know,
did I hit with my run?
No, weekend?
I could have been killed.
Why?
I am so out of shape, Chris.
Oh, really?
I went running up past where we used to live up Rohan.
That's a tough run, though.
And I went up the hill.
God, Jesus!
I stopped at the hill, Chris. So I ran from the crossroads to that hill. You know, we were turning up that way.
I hate that hill.
I ran to there, and my heart, my lungs were burning. My heart was racing and horrible. I walked up that hill and I was like, this was the biggest mistake of my life. Mm-hmm. It's like I should have ran for like 2 minutes,
stopped,
walked, and walked for a bit.
Yeah,
I thought I was fitter than I was.
That hill, I used to use it predominantly for hill sprints. Just walk to the hill, sprint up it, walk on it, sprint up. It's the most horrible 10 minutes of your life, and then afterwards you're like, that feels great.
Yeah,
you don't feel much better afterwards.
My legs hurt all week, but now they're better again. I'm gonna go running again now this week.
I've actually taken up a lot of stretching as well. Kind of feel that helps a lot. But getting back to what we said about to counteract the fact that all I'm taking is cold showers now, I've now 2 to 3 times a week started hitting the sauna.
Oh, cool.
So I feel like I'm making back, you know. That's I can good. Relax in hot.
Where's the sauna at?
I use the hotel gym.
In Armagh.
Awesome. Because I'm being work and I'm like, you know what, I'm just going to nip up here. Still haven't taken out a membership, so I just pay the £5. I go in, I sit in the sauna for about an hour. Not all at once. I do like 20 minutes, come out, cold shower, 20 minutes. And I feel great.
That's good.
It eases all my leg pain and my joint pain and everything, and I just feel good afterwards. Then I have a cold shower, I get dressed, and I go home.
That's a good way to be.
Yeah, so I've started doing a lot of stuff that I'm just like, I wouldn't normally have done. Feel a lot better for it too.
That's good.
So there you go. That's what I'm going to get up to this week as well. I have a 10-mile run in the morning.
Callousing your mind.
It's unbelievable. I Dave like Goggins, it. Look him up. Swear to God. That's my week, D. And that's been the week that we've just had.
That's been the news.
This has been the news. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, thank you for tuning in to episode 73 of the podcast. Remember, you can find this podcast and all previous podcasts over at iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, any podcast hosting service. You will also find the video version, which goes up one day later than the audio now, over at youtube.com/XIGaming. That is the operation of umbrellas that we operate
which
under.
Which we are currently under.
Thank you to everybody who's gotten in contact with us this week, who has remained in touch. Thank you for being a follower. I will try to have more on the Instagram at some point. But
also we're on Facebook, apparently.
I told you it picked a bad fucking month or whatever to start, you know, ditching social media when we're trying to get the podcast back up. But for podcast purposes I'll use it, but other than that I'm trying to stay clear.
Yeah, that's a good strat.
It's good for callousing the mind. I don't want to do it, but I do it and I feel good. You know. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. We'll see you all bright-eyed and bushy-tailed next week for the St. Patrick's Day podcast. We'll see you all then. Goodbye and God bless.
Bye-bye.
Should we just bring that back?
No. We don't actually have one at the minute.
No.